Great. Welcome, Erin King, to our first coaching session. I'm Nancy Smay, and we've got Dawn Alexander here. We are doing live coaching, sort of live, for Story Strategy, which is our ongoing video and podcast series. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, you're excited to have you. So can you tell us a little bit? Everybody knows who we are, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, so I write contemporary romance. In my non-writing life, I am still a writer. I'm a technical writer and editor by trade. I live in the DC area. I've got two little kids, two dogs, a horse. They all keep me busy. So yeah, I have been podcasting for years, writing for years. So
right.
Yeah, so I'm comfortable in this format.
I love how she says she has a horse, and Nancy and I both go...
Yep, she was a pandemic pony.
No, that was a thing.
Well, everybody else got pandemic puppies, and my husband said we couldn't get another dog. So my daughter got into horseback riding during the first summer when everything kind of opened back up a little bit again. And while she was taking lessons, I figured it was time for me to get back in the saddle. I rode as a kid, but it's been a long time. And then we ended up buying a horse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pandemic pony.
Cool.
And that's awesome.
So, do you write under the name Erin King or do you write under a pen name?
Well, I'm not published, but my plan is to write under my name. I might use my middle initial, which is A, because Erin King is a pretty common name. And I think that there is at least one other Erin King writing. I think she writes young adult or maybe middle grade. So I haven't completely decided, but I think I'll probably go Erin A. King.
Okay. Cool. Well, Dawn, do you want to kind of lead us into the actual, what we're going
to
talk about here?
So I know that when you were signing up for this, you mentioned conflict, which is totally my thing. So
oh, good.
Tell us a little bit about your story and we will figure out what we can do to make your conflict better.
Okay. This story I've been working on for so long and I've put it away for like the past 2 years. I had submitted it to a mentorship program back in 2020 and didn't end up being chosen, and I was so stalled out that I haven't picked it up since. But the premise of the story, so my main character's name is Nola. She is an artist by trade, but when about 6 years ago, her parents died in a car accident, and she had to move out of the city, move back home to her small town to take care of her younger brother, who is now in high school and thinking about going to college. And so she's kind of trying to figure out what her next steps are. Her current job is interior design. It was kind of the closest thing in the whole art vein that she could find within her skill set in her town. And so she ends up being, she's up for a promotion, competing with another member of her company for this promotion. And she ends up taking on a client who is a guy that she knew back in high school who was always like the super nerdy guy. He had a thing for her and she kind of knew it, but she kind of ignored it. Well, now he owns a video game company that is doing very, very well. And he is looking at opening a second office on the East Coast. So he has hired her firm to design the space for the office. And she ends up taking him on as a client. And they really hit it off. And this is where I'm running into problems because I don't have a strong enough reason for them not to be together. I have that they live on opposite sides of the country and she's pretty much locked into where she lives until her brother graduates. But once he graduates, there's nothing stopping her from moving. They don't want to hook up while she's working with him. And that actually ends up being a plot point later on. She gets in big trouble at work once they do get together and her boss finds out and she ends up losing the promotion and it's this whole big thing. But I have a lot of reasons for her to put off being with him, but not for her to ultimately think that this is a really bad idea long term. And I don't really have any reason for him not to want to try something. The main thing that I have as her real like nitty gritty reason for not wanting to be in this relationship is that she is afraid of her younger brother getting attached because he idolizes this guy. He always has. He's very into video games. He wants to be a video game designer. So he idolizes Roger, and really she's afraid that if she and Roger get together and then they break up. It's going to devastate her younger brother, who's already lost his parents and he's going off to college, and everything in his life has changed so much. And she doesn't want to be a reason for more things to be changing.
Yeah. So does the younger brother have a pretty, do they have a relationship? He and Roger, do they spend time together? Do we get to see that relationship?
They do. Yeah. He's kind of idolized him from afar through magazines and social media and stuff. But when they actually do meet, when Roger hires Nola's company, he does end up meeting Jeremy and they do get along really well, which makes Nola even more resistant to the idea of anything, because Roger's going back to California and there's no way that she doesn't want to see Jeremy get hurt again. She tries to keep Roger from developing a relationship with Jeremy, but Jeremy's like 17 years old and knows his way around social media. And so he's able to kind of circumvent all of her best plans. So.
Okay. So can I go now?
Yeah. I have a whole bunch of stuff I could say, but I'm waiting for you to do your thing.
So, okay. The main thing that I'm hearing that's missing is you've got your external conflict. You've got the long distance relationship, mm-hmm. which can be managed. You've got the, okay, you can't, he's a client and that could be managed. But then you say that it kind of resolves itself because she ends up not getting her promotion and misses out on that. So you've got that. What you've got a touch of is the internal conflict for her of, I'm not going to let my brother get attached to this guy and then him leave him because he's right. already been through so much. I'm not going to let that happen again. You could add a layer to that. Well, the brother's 17. He's going to go off to college. That's going to eliminate that conflict.
Right.
If he goes off to college, they've already got their own little relationship going on over here. If him and I break up, he won't have to see him because he'll be off at college. So one thing I would say to that is, if this kid just lost his parents, is she going to let him go off to college? Or is her plan of, he's going to go off to college and I'm going to move someplace closer to him so he still gets to have the college experience, but I'm right there.
Right.
And so you could add some kind of layer like that to where that doesn't eliminate that conflict for her, because she's... And I think you said it had been a while since the parents had died.
I think right now it's changed many times, but I think right now it's been 6 years.
Okay. So he could be where he's kind of well adjusted, but if they're all each other has, then that would make a little bit of, you know, it would not be unreasonable for the sister to be like, okay, you're not moving across the country by yourself.
You know,
I can work anywhere. I'll just go be close to where you are. I'm not going to live in your dorm room next to you, but I'll just be nearby.
Right.
So you could add in that layer. But what's missing from him is he doesn't have any external issues other than the long distance relationship, which isn't, I mean, long distance relationships, when you've got this kind of money, because you're talking about he's super successful.
Yeah.
That could easily be managed. He can afford plane tickets.
Right. The other element that I had forgotten to mention is his business partner is sort of stepping back a little bit because he's got little kids. His wife is currently pregnant with twins. Like, he's going to be stepping back a little bit to deal with some family stuff. So there is a conversation about, well, you know, I could move to the East Coast, but I can't do that because, you know, I can't leave my business partner hanging. I have to run the company, and he's the face of the company. He's doing lots of interviews and stuff, and he doesn't actually like that element of it. He wants to get back to actually making the games, but he doesn't know how to tell his business partner that. So, like, he's got some stuff going on, but that doesn't really factor into the romance plot. So, yeah.
Internal conflict.
Yeah, he has no internal conflict.
Yes.
Or at least we don't know about it if he does.
Right.
Neither do I.
Because the internal conflict is the line in the sand. It is the, I will do everything but this.
Right.
And so for her, I will do everything but let my little brother get hurt.
Right.
You know, you can dump me. That's fine. I don't care. You're not going to hurt my little brother. And so for him, he needs something like, he dated a girl in a long distance relationship, thought they were going to get married, and found out she'd been cheating on him the entire time.
Okay.
She just kicked her boyfriend out whenever he came to visit every other weekend or whatever.
Okay.
Or, go ahead, Nancy.
Well, the internal conflict, one of the easier ways to kind of figure out what it might be or what it should be in romance is it usually relates to their wound. So,
right.
Like what Dawn just said, you know, someone finds out her fiance has been cheating on her, that's going to be a wound that is going to come up again when she's in a situation that reminds her, like, oh, this could happen to me and that was bad when that happened, that hurt, I don't want to do that again. So for him, if you said, like, he was a nerd in high school, She knew him back then, I don't know how she treated him or how he was treated overall, and I don't want to be too stereotypical, but it could spring from some kind of insecurity that comes from the way he was always treated.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, is he afraid that she's only interested in him because all of a sudden he has all this money? Or
in an earlier draft, there was an element of that, and I think it got lost somewhere along the way, but you're reminding me that I should bring that back in, especially because when they were in high school, she's like 2 years older than him. And so she was like the really hot senior chick that he just really had a thing for. And he was tutoring her loser boyfriend. And he really, really, really liked her. But she didn't see him because she was in a relationship with the cool guy. So there is definitely an element of, she wasn't interested in me then. Does she only want me now because I'm successful? Is this just a fling? But is that strong enough? No, I didn't think so.
The way that would work is if she's in some position where she really needs money, like to pay for the little brother to go to college.
That's actually the opening scene, is her finding out about this promotion right after she's found out how much out-of-state tuition costs for the college her brother's decided he really wants to go to.
So if it is, she only wants to be with me because I'm in the position to provide her this money to get her little brother into college.
Okay.
So if she was in a position where, to put this politely, I guess, if she is in a position to use him, then that would make sense. And
okay.
If there's any evidence that he might, like if she used him in high school to as tutor, you know, for tutoring, or if somebody else did that, then that makes sense.
That's what I was going to say. If he's had that situation happen before, so that he's going to be more wary about getting used by somebody.
Okay. Okay.
Her, then that gives you, I mean, it makes it a little more interesting if she did something in high school that maybe could be perceived as having used him, but I would try to work it so that she didn't see it that way, or she didn't realize that she
intended that way.
Right.
You don't want her to become super unlikable.
Right.
Right.
As far as, so her younger brother is hoping to go into game design, which is what Roger's whole field is. Is there something there where if he sees her as, well, you're just trying to use me to get your brother's foot in the door, but does that conflict too much with her not wanting to let her brother get close to him?
You could tweak that a little bit of, his company has this great internship program.
Okay.
And you start as a freshman in college. We let you come, you know, and this is her brother's dream. And if I get involved with you and it doesn't work out, it's not so much about breaking my little brother's heart. It's I've ruined his future.
Okay.
Oh, I like that.
And I like that a lot.
And so that's a conflict that won't go away.
Yeah.
So is she just doing this because she thinks I can help out her little brother? And she's thinking, I can't do this because I can't have you take something from him that he's been working from this whole time. It can't be my fault.
Right.
You know, and that could add another layer of fun to it of, we have to make sure there's no perception of favoritism.
Right.
So
yeah, because that's been more conflict too, where he really wants her, but he also knows her brother's totally qualified and doesn't want there to be any perception of why her brother gets the thing. And yeah,
right.
I like that a lot.
And you could tie in the business partner to that. Of maybe usually the business partner is the one who handles this. So normally it wouldn't be connected to Roger, but the business partner is stepping back now. So he's taking it over and the business partner can't think that I'm screwing this up, but right. I have to, you know, so you might consider adding something like that.
Yeah.
That raises your stakes a little bit for each side.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
You have to figure out how to get out of that too. And my mind immediately went back to like, well, maybe the business partner, maybe he can work it out with the business partner. So he actually handles the mentorship program for one last year, just so that he's free to date what's her name without, you know.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I like that a lot. I think I can work with that. I think that'll add much more, much more conflict and interest.
Good, but he still needs the wound.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And she kind of has the wound in that her parents died, but she needs a moment where something happened where she's not going to trust this guy. And it's not necessarily him. It's just, I don't trust relationships, or I don't trust long distance relationships, or I don't trust relationships with clients.
Right.
You know? And you kind of play off that a little bit, it sounds like, with the whole, I'm going to lose this promotion.
Right.
But there needs to be something before that. Usually the wound, like Nancy was talking about, that happens before your story opens. And so usually there's something before that that's going to trigger the fears. And in this case, her fears are going to come true. So they both need a moment where you can pinpoint, this is where things went bad for me, and I'm never going to let it happen again.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Well, hers could be losing her parents, like losing everything, but it could be a financial thing even. Like, the loss of these great relationships in my life also, like, ruined me financially. And so it's almost twofold then. Like, I'm afraid to get too involved with anybody because I have to be able to save myself. And the last time I really depended on somebody, it was so painful that I can't do that again.
Right.
Yeah. When her parents died, she had fairly recently graduated college. She'd gotten this really great job in the city where she was doing exactly what she wanted to be doing. And then when she had to come back home to take care of her brother, she ends up doing this job that she doesn't really love, she wants to get back to the life that she had before, but she's kind of torn, like, can I even do that? It's been 6 years since I've done that. How do I get back into that field? I'm thinking now I might be able to add in an element where maybe she thinks that Roger could provide her a job since she is an artist and there's a lot of that involved in game design, and he's not willing to do that. Somehow I need to noodle on that a little bit more, but there might be something in there too.
Well, two things I think you could add. One is like what Nancy just said with the parents dying, ruining her financially. If the parents died and they didn't have life insurance.
Yeah.
And they didn't have, and so it was, I lost everything. I lost my job. I lost my parents. I had to come back here. We had to fight to keep the house, or I had to move my brother into an apartment so that he could stay in the same school district. So something like that would build in that fear of, I don't get attached to anything because it can all be taken away in a moment.
Right.
And so you could build on something like that.
Well, and I was just thinking too, there's something about them both looking at Roger as a source of job related stuff that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say you can't do it, but what if, you know, she's not looking at him for a job, but he's looking at her like, hey, you are a really talented artist. I know a ton of people in the video game production world. I could probably do some networking and maybe find an opportunity for you. And that would require her depending on him. Okay. And she isn't good at doing that because she's only going to depend on herself from now on.
Right.
I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, where it's, yeah, I don't want her to be actually using him.
Well, Nancy and I are sharing a brain because that's exactly what I was going to say, is maybe she's not asking him for a job, but he's trying to get her to take a job. So, yes, good. We got that.
Yeah.
Okay. This is good stuff. I can work with this. This is, like I said before, this manuscript has been just sitting on my hard drive for 2 years and completely untouched. And I keep looking at it and thinking, I should get back to this and I should actually do something with this. And then I just, I'm like, but I don't have any ideas for what I can do with it. So this is way more than I've thought about this story in the past 2 years. And I'm actually kind of excited to open it back up and dive back into it. So
I love hearing that.
Yes.
That's my favorite thing. We finish a coaching session. If the person I'm working with doesn't say, I have a lot of ideas, I'm really excited to get back to this.
Yes.
Then I feel like I didn't succeed.
Yeah, so. No, I think there is a lot that I can do with what we've talked about tonight. And I'm very excited to go open the manuscript back up and reread what I wrote 2 years ago and see if any of it is decent and then throw half of it away and start over.
Yep, we all do that.
Yes.
Well, and I have to say, it's always a good idea when you are stuck like that or when you do have like a disappointing moment to step away from it for a little bit, because you will go back and some of it you're going to be like, what? And some of it you're like, hey, I wrote that.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome. I'm actually good at this.
Yeah, my first 50 pages, I feel pretty good about. It's everything after that that I'm like, this is kind of hot garbage.
The thing about getting your conflict really hammered out is that it automatically creates scenes that are going to have to happen. Mm-hmm. And my problem, as Dawn always knows, is, you know, well, but then what do they do? But what, how does the story go? And if you have a really tight conflict, then the story parts of it are kind of there for you.
Yes. Yeah. And part of the problem with this manuscript is that it started out as a NaNoWriMo book. So I'm terrible with outlining. Like, I just can't. I can do it to a point, but especially when I started writing this like 5 years ago, I really was bad at outlining. And so so much of the first draft of this book was just word vomit. And I have cut so many just superfluous sex scenes because I was like, I gotta write words today. May as well send them to a hotel again, I guess. And none of those scenes were at all needed. So thank you guys.
Good.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know where to find us if you ever need us again.
Yes.
And there's a million of these videos and podcasts up and available that might help with whatever particular thing you're working on. So feel free to dig through those.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
This was fun.
Welcome back to Story Strategy. This is part two of Dawn and Nancy's live coaching sessions with author Aria Wyatt.
So, Aria, will you introduce yourself for us and tell us a little bit about your writing?
Okay. I'm a skinny romance author, and I live in upstate New York. My day job is a pharmacist at a small town independent pharmacy. So my writing happens usually early, very early in the morning, and on weekends. And I like writing things with like a lot of heat, heart, humor, but it's mainly at this point, it's steamy contemporary.
Okay. And were you part of the Serena Bowen Trino?
I was.
That's why I know your name, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And you know I'm Delancey.
Yes, I do. I was kind of surprised when I first found that out.
Yeah, not everybody knows that.
That's actually familiar.
Yeah, secret identity.
Not advertised, but also not hidden.
Gotcha.
Tell us about your story. Tell us where you're struggling and we'll go from there.
Okay. So I have this tendency of writing couples that can't just be one book. So I'm currently working on a trilogy. And my issue is that the first book I feel is very solid. I have the, you know, it's very much romancing the beat structure wise with the meet cute and everything. I guess what I'm struggling with is for the second and third books, a story arc and how to structure that, since I've already done the whole meet cute, all that stuff. Where do I take it now? I mean, I know what's going to happen. I'm just wanting to make sure that I'm not leaving readers feeling something's missing.
Oh, that's a good question. So this is one couple through three books.
Mm-hmm.
So their happy ever after can't happen until the end of the third book. But at the end of one and two, are you doing cliffhangers?
The end of the first book isn't really cliffhangery. I mean, I do introduce a conflict where you're kind of like, whoa, you know, like a health issue that may or may not be a problem. And I leave that hanging, but it's sort of like a happy for now at the end of it. It's really not cliffhangery. I may do a cliffhanger on the second book. I'm currently writing that one, but I'm just sort of not sure how to make sure I have that read through when it's fulfilling. Because ultimately, the story arc, I feel like, is going to wrap up a lot of mystery and a lot of the character arc as well. So I guess I'm just kind of floundering with structure, and I don't want to miss any of the beats and have it fall flat.
Yeah. So is it a true trilogy, or is it an interconnected series?
It's the true trilogy because it's the same couple throughout.
Right. But usually a true trilogy, if you're telling the story all the way across romance, in a romance trilogy, usually, like Nancy said, they don't get their happily ever after until the very end. And so if you're ending the first book with them together, what is the hook to draw me into the second book if I'm interested in the romance? I know you're saying you've got a subplot going. Is it a like a mystery subplot or a family saga subplot?
It's more like, you know, dark secrets in their past kind of thing. Like they both have somewhat traumatic backstories and some of the past stuff comes back to haunt them. And I sort of hint at it throughout the first book. In the first book, they're sort of getting to know each other. In the second book, the male character is going to be starring in like this upcoming Broadway show that has not happened yet. And then it's going to start in the second book. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of them getting to know each other and leading up to that point. And a lot of the secrets and the potential for people from the past to kind of reappear and issues between them, like conflict, like they don't know each other as well as they think they do yet. Those types of things.
Is it a little suspensey, like the people coming back from the past and the secrets? Or
a little
is it?
Bit, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because if you're looking, because if I'm a reader and I pick up the first book and I know I'm getting into a trilogy, I'm usually going to expect something at the end of that first book that I have to have that second book. I have to know what's going to happen, which is why generally in those kind of trilogies, they're not together at the end of the first book.
Okay. Or
they've had their first like serious, intimate, yes, I love you so much. And then kaboom type thing.
Okay.
And you know, like the minute after the kaboom, it wasn't I love you so much. The I love you so much has been put on hold and we got to deal with the kaboom. So
yeah.
Two different ways that I see it done with the authors that I work with who write trilogies, either they have those strong cliffhangers and you have your meet cute, your inciting incident, the part where they're, okay, yeah, I'm in this. A lot of times you'll get to what would normally be the midpoint, which is some kind of huge shift in the relationship. Either it's the first time they have sex or it's the first time that they open up intimately with each other, or the first time they show any kind of vulnerability, and then something bad happens to draw me into that second book. And in the second book, you have to reverse just a little bit, usually.
Okay.
Because you're building back up to this. And then something, you have a bigger kaboom at the end of the second book.
Yeah.
And then you have to reverse a little bit more. So it's more, instead of being an arc like this, it's more like a kind of a leapfrog arc. Does that make sense, Nancy?
Well, I think you have more experience with trilogies, because in my mind, I'm thinking like I use Romancing the Beat as well. And so those beats are super clear for one story. But I think to make a trilogy, if the romance is the main plot, you really have to stretch those beats over all three stories. So you're probably cutting act one, act two, act three. Does she do four acts? I can't remember.
It's four. Yeah, there are four.
Four.
Yeah. So, you know, you can play with two and three and figure out where they fall. But I think you have to have a pretty strong subplot or subplots to carry a trilogy.
Okay.
There has to be, or just the external conflict has to be so encompassing that it can carry them through three books, right? Because I've also seen books where they're up against one thing in the first one, then they're up against something else in the second one, then they're, you know, like all the Nora Roberts, what's her sci-fi pen?
J.D. Robb.
Yeah.
J.D. Robb's, yes. In those books, the focus isn't on the romance. I know that because I may have a whole shelf of them over there.
I have a feeling you have something to say about J.D. Robb.
The focus isn't on the romance. There are threats to their relationship that happen. Like you're talking about, the people from the past show up and there's a threat to the relationship. But the main focus is whatever crime they're trying to solve. And then the romance is over here. So with yours, when you're talking about you have this thing that pops up at the end of the first book. Is that going to be enough to drive them apart during the second book to where we get to see them reunited? Or are they together during the second book, just fighting against this external force?
Would it help if I gave you more of an idea of what the external
threat? Sure. So yeah, however much you want to share.
The heroine is a survivor of sexual abuse. And she's a photojournalist, and she is assigned to make a documentary about this up-and-coming Broadway show that the hero is one of the leads in. Something goes on with the director, and they have to bring in a new director. And this new director, this happens in book two, this new director is actually going to be the man from her past. And okay. She can't tell her love interest because she doesn't want to ruin his dream of being on Broadway. And she knows he'd like go nuts if he knew what happened. And so she kind of is going to pull back a little bit because as much as she wants to be there, she can't. So there is going to be some conflict there, but it's more like the external conflict is going to start to push them apart because he's going to feel her retreating and that type of thing, if that makes any sense at all.
And then her external conflict is directly tied to her wound and her internal conflict, which is good. Although I don't know. I feel like there almost has to be something else. So in the first book, what's the external conflict?
The external conflict really in the first book is that she really keeps to herself. She doesn't tell people much about herself. She has a past with, like, she had been impregnated by her rapist and gave up her baby for adoption, but she doesn't talk about it. Very few people even know. And the hero was actually orphaned by his parents to suicide, unfortunately. It sounds a lot darker than actually it is.
So yeah. What you're talking about there are internal conflicts.
Yes.
The external conflict is whatever forces outside of them that they're having to choose between.
Okay.
And so when you talk about your middle book and you talk about that there's this external conflict of, do I tell him that this guy did this to me and I'm risking his career, or do I keep that to myself and I'm risking our relationship? So you've got a choice going there for her. My concern about using, the reason I think Nancy's saying that there needs to be another layer to that, is my concern about that is generally you don't want your conflict to be something that could be solved with a conversation. And so if her and the love interest were to sit down and have a conversation, then your conflict goes away. So if the other layers you could add to it is, if I come out and tell this, then I'm going to be exposed and that's going to impact my career as a photojournalist. You know, people are going to question that. Or so am I understanding right? Like nothing ever happened to this guy who hurt her?
No, nothing ever happened to him. He's kind of got off scot-free and she kept her mouth shut because she was young when it happened.
So does he have some kind of threat over her for why she would keep her mouth shut now?
Not really. It's more of she kind of wants just peace rather than justice. She doesn't want to really confront it. She just is burying it and moving on and not dealing with it until book two, where all of a sudden she's like face to face with him again.
Because I'm with Nancy. I feel like there's another thing that needs to be there. Like if she had filed charges against him in the beginning, and I'm not suggesting you're saying you should change your story. I'm just giving an example of how you could build this. If she had filed charges against him in the beginning and they paid her, but she signed an NDA, well, now she can't come out and say anything.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got the internal conflict of, I took the money because I was young and I took the money, but I can't say anything now because there is this, I would be in violation of this non-disclosure. He could sue me, whatever. So if he has some kind of threat over her, or if it is maybe other people have claimed he did this to them and she didn't come forward, and okay. She's worried about the fallout from that.
Okay.
So does that, Did that sound, any of that sound like that would fit for what you're looking for?
Some of it definitely could. Like when I'm thinking about the way that I ended the first book, it has like that kind of kaboom, like you said. It's because her mother reappears and with some news about having breast cancer. And this particular strain of breast cancer can have a hereditary component, and she wanted to tell her about it. Well, the problem was she had told the guy that her mom wasn't alive. So he's questioning everything between them as a lie. And it's something, yes, it could be resolved with a conversation if she laid herself bare, but she hasn't done that ever for anyone.
So I'm finding myself wondering, what does she want? What is the heroine's goal? Because we understand that the hero, his dream is to be on Broadway, and he's getting his dream, but it's in jeopardy because of what she knows. And so that all, I think, is working really well and is very strong. What I'm not as clear on is, so she's a photojournalist. She's doing an expose? Is there something bad about this show she's trying to uncover? It's a controversial show because there's it touches on things like alcoholism and opiate addiction, like stuff that you wouldn't expect to see on Broadway as much. So it's like a new concept or whatever. So that's why she's going to be doing this documentary. She wants to be promoted within her newspaper. And like, cause right now she's the entertainment photojournalist. So she's mostly covering like galas and celebrity stuff, but she wants to do something a bit more meaningful.
Director have the power to shut that down?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And he has the power to ban her from the theater to where she can't get in there and get her story.
He could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. But there has to be something. Is it enough, Dawn, that maybe she's got some kind of ultimatum at work? Like, if you want to prove yourself, if you want a real news story, turn this into one. Here you go.
Yeah. If she's got the goal of, I'm going to expose, you know, the drug addiction and everything else that's going on behind the scenes here. And then this guy shows up and he knows what he did. And so if his answer to it is, I will absolutely ruin you. You will never be allowed to step foot in this theater again. You will never be allowed to step foot. You know, I've got friends who you won't be able to go in and take pictures with their shows. And you think being the entertainment journalist is bad? Wait till you're on the obituary column, you know? And so if you can set him up with any kind of connection to where he knows her boss, or he knows somebody who she's trying to get a job with, so that he's a threat to her as well as a threat to the love interest, that would, I think, increase the stakes there.
Okay.
And that builds your conflict, because then she's making this choice between his career, my career, exposing this.
Right.
All of these other things that also would involve going through admitting what happened and dealing with the fallout from that too.
Yeah. So at what point does this director guy show up? Is it somewhere in the first book?
It's going to be the second book.
Okay. Because I'm thinking that would be a great big boom at the end of the first book, if the readers understood the stakes and why that threatens their relationship. But so you said the breast cancer thing is the big boom at the end of the first book.
The big boom is, the breast cancer thing where like her dead mother shows up on the doorstep.
Why does she tell him her mother's dead?
Because the man who hurt her was the mother's boyfriend, and the mother did nothing about it. So she's dead
to her. Got it.
They hadn't spoken in years. And the only reason the mother's reaching out really is just because she feels like, you know, you should know about this health thing, et cetera. And you should probably pass it along to your son's adoptive parents, because, you know, this could affect him too. And then the love interest, like, what do you mean you have a son? What do you mean your mom's still alive? Like, it's like he questions everything, like she said to him.
Yeah.
Do you reveal in the end of the first book that it's because of the breast cancer, or do you just have mom show up?
I reveal the breast cancer part at the end, and then they like reconcile.
We fought through whatever the conflict is in the first book, and we get to, we're happy and we're in love and oh, it's so great. And then mom shows up on the front porch and it's like, hey,
I need to talk to you and I've got some information you're going to want to pass on to your son.
And he's standing right
there.
Yeah.
Then as a reader, I'm like, son, where does son come from? The second part of that is I would assume if I read that part about mom's got breast cancer and I'm passing this information along and they reconcile, that wraps that all up. And I'm going to think the second book could be about the breast cancer, which I particularly, my own personal taste, I don't want to read.
Right.
You know, that's not my thing. So I think if you make that more of a cutoff, and then you go into the second book with, he's got some serious trust issues now, especially mm-hmm. if, like you said, he was orphaned and, you know, I don't have parents. How did you not tell me you have a kid?
And right. And a mom.
You said your mother was dead and my mother is dead, but your mother is standing on this porch. That's going to definitely cause some ripples in the relationship.
You can leave it on such a fun, like, explosive scene with her standing on the doorstep and him being like, your mother? Your mother's dead. Like, what a fun. Like, and then, boom, book is over. Pre-order the next book.
And I've like, never done, like, a cliffhanger ending. I've always been kind of afraid to. So, like, I always try to, like, wrap it up, leave a little bit. But I'm thinking it makes a lot of sense.
Oh, readers hate cliffhangers. Don't do them. Readers love cliffhangers. They hate them because of the tension. And if the next right. book isn't out soon, they're bummed. And yes, they hate that.
Yeah.
I will say letting the reader know that's what they're in for.
Yes. You have to make sure that you're not promising to happy ever after.
Right.
Come.
Right. So if you say in your blurb, this is the first book of a three book trilogy, then usually readers are aware, oh, okay, it's not all going to be solved right here. If you don't say that and I pick it up and I get to the end of that, then I'm very angry. I'm still going to order book two, but I'm very angry.
Right.
But right. as an author trying to make an income, the important thing she just said there is, I'm still going to order book two.
Right.
I'm still going to order book two. Yes.
We
with
want.
All due respect to readers who I love and who feel my, you know, yeah. part of my career, it's not disrespectful to feed into that love yeah. and hatred of tension.
Yes. And they will immediately put it in your reviews that there was a cliffhanger. I mean, that'll right. immediately show up in the reviews, which
true.
Doesn't necessarily stop people from buying it. It's just a heads up, yeah. I know what you're going into. But I know we originally started this conversation talking about the beats and making sure you hit all the beats. I think what you're looking at is, like we were talking about, kind of leapfrogging back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And so if you end the first book on what would normally be your 50% beat of we're happy and things are good, that's normally right before everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And so if you end that first book right with the first crack of things are going to start falling apart, I think that's going to hook your readers into your second book to find out, where did mom come from? Who is the son? Why was she lying?
Right.
So where does the second book end, Dawn, in that story arc? Should it be like the black moment? Is like just, the whole
yeah,
second
would
book
be my,
like,
yeah.
just a lot of like, oh my God, everything is falling apart. And then black moment, book ends, next book is rebuilding.
Is rebuilding. And then your big, what I call
great chapter
battle, which would be whatever she's going to do. Is she eventually going to do something to take down this director? And you don't have to answer that if you don't want to give a spoiler, but.
Yeah.
Whatever she does to take down the director, and then whatever he does to get her back, or whatever she does to get him back.
Okay.
So would be the focus of your third.
Okay. How long is each book, Arya?
So I'm a little bit wordy. It's currently like 117,000.
The first book is?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Okay. Okay. I can't write short. I have tried. It's a problem. It's really
well.
Problem.
It is and it isn't. If you take that piece though of the reconciliation and shove it over into book two, then that'll shorten up book one a little bit too. I think. I mean, if it was me, I'd want to keep them under 100 each. And I only asked that question because I was like, so the reconciliation and the grand gesture and stuff, I could see that like filling out a good 75,000, 80,000 words. But the middle one is the one that I worry about. Like, how do you? Because it's a lot of tension to sustain if they're broken up and if it's all worry and badness and
well, okay, so it's a lot of tension to sustain. But you've got all this great area for push and pull and finally having a moment where he's going to be like, I am totally with you. I am in this with you. We are going to be okay. It's going to be fine. And then something really, really bad needs to happen. Not like, you know, don't kill anybody off. But
no.
Well, but not Nicholas Sparks bad. But something really, yeah. really bad happened. So that, again, you're dragging that reader into the next book thinking, okay, we almost had it. They were almost there.
Yeah.
And readers, I mean, story structure obviously is my thing, and that's what I do for a living, so I can recognize it. But readers will start to feel that of, oh, it's good. I can relax for just this. Nope, we're back there again. And so
right.
there's, and I think with the plot that you're setting up, if you add in those extra layers that we talked about to build out those stakes so that there's a lot at risk for both of them, they're both risking their careers, they're both risking each other's dream, because at some point he's going to have to find out what happened with this director. Then he has to make the decision. Do I still work for this guy? Okay. So does that help you?
Yes. I realize I need to kind of reconfigure the end of the book that I've written so that there's more of a draw to bring readers along for the second book. Because right now, how I have it, I don't think there is enough. I mean, I think there's enough, but I don't think the readers will find there to be enough. So that does help me kind of put it in perspective about how to structure it. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Good. Good.
Well, this was fun. You know where to find us if you run into another roadblock or you just want to ask a couple questions, Facebook or our website or email or however you want to reach out. We're always here. So it was really fun talking to you today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It sounds like an interesting book. I know you were like, it sounds kind of dark, but...
Yeah, the backstory's dark. The book itself isn't that dark. It's just the backstory's pretty dark. But
it sounds like a really interesting story.
Thank you so much.
You can find story writing tips, tricks, coaching, and courses at our site, www.evidentinc.com. Get live feedback in our writing community at Facebook at facebook.com/evidentinc. And find past episodes of Story Strategy at our YouTube channel. Story powers the world, and we can't wait to help you tell yours.